and not at all against their own inclination. By this time, the afternoon sun was slanting westward, and by its rays, Sime could see the sturdy figure of the old innkeeper growing smaller and smaller, but still standing and looking after them quite silently. The sunshine in his silver hair. Sime had a fixed superstitious fancy, left in his mind by the chance phrase of the colonel, that this was indeed, perhaps, the last honest stranger whom he should ever see upon the earth. He was still looking at this dwindling figure, which stood as a mere gray blotch, touched with a white flame against the great green wall of the steep down behind him. And as he stared over the top of the down behind the innkeeper, there appeared an army of black-clad and marching men. They seemed to hang above the good man in his house like a black cloud of locusts. The horses had been saddled, none too soon. Chapter 12. The Earth in Anarchy. Urging the horses to a gallop without respect to the rather rugged descent of the road, the horsemen soon regained their advantage over the men on the march, and at last the bulk of the first buildings of Lancy cut off the sight of their pursuers. Nevertheless, the ride had been a long one, and by the time they reached the real town, the west was warming with the color and quality of sunset. The colonel suggested that, before making finally for the police station, they should make the effort, in passing, to attach to themselves one more individual who might be useful. 4 out of the 5 rich men in this town, he said, are common swindlers. I suppose the proportion is pretty equal all over the world. The 5th is a friend of mine and a very fine fellow, and what is even more important from our point of view, he owns a motor car. I am afraid, said the professor in his mirthful way, looking back along the white road on which the black, crawling patch might appear at any moment. I am afraid we have hardly time for afternoon calls. Dr. Renard's house is only 3 minutes off, said the colonel. Our danger, said Dr. Bull, is not 2 minutes off. Yes, said Sime, if we ride on fast, we must leave them behind, for they are on foot. He has a motor car, said the colonel. But we may not get it, said Bull. Yes, he is quite on your side, but he might be out. Hold your tongue, said Sime suddenly. What is that noise? For a second they all sat as still as equestrian statues, and for a second, for 2 or 3 or 4 seconds, heaven and earth seemed equally still. Then all their ears, in an agony of attention, heard along the road that indescribable thrill and throb that means only one thing, horses. The colonel's face had an instantaneous change, as if lightning had struck it and yet left it scatheless. They have done us, he said with brief military irony. Prepare to receive cavalry. Where can they have got the horses? Asked Sime as he mechanically urged his steed to a canter. The colonel was silent for a little, then he said in a strained voice, I was speaking with strict accuracy when I said that the Solio d'Or was the only place where one can get horses within 20 miles. No, said Sime violently, I don't believe he'd do it, not with all that white hair. He may have been forced, said the colonel gently. They must be at least 100 strong, for which reason we are all going to see my friend Renard, who has a motor car. With these words he swung his horse suddenly round a street corner and went down the street with such thundering speed that the others, though already well at the gallop, had difficulty in following the flying tail of his horse. Dr. Renard inhabited a high and comfortable house at the top of a steep street, so that when the riders alighted at his door they could once more see the solid green ridge of the hill, with the white road across it, standing up above all the roofs of the town. They breathed again to see that the road as yet was clear, and they rang the bell. Dr. Renard was a beaming, brown-bearded man, a good example of that silent but very busy professional class which France has preserved even more perfectly than England. When the matter was explained to him, he pooh-poohed the panic of the ex-marquis altogether. He said, with the solid French skepticism, that there was no conceivable probability of a general anarchist rising. Anarchy, he said, shrugging his shoulders, it is childishness. Et ah, cried out the colonel suddenly, pointing over the other's shoulder, and that is childishness, isn't it? They all looked round and saw a curve of black cavalry come sweeping over the top of the hill with all the energy of Attila. Swiftly as they rode, however, the whole rank still kept well together, and they could see the black vizards of the first line as level as a line of uniforms. But although the main black square was the same, though traveling faster, there was now one sensational difference which they could see clearly upon the slope of the hill, as if upon a slanted map. The bulk of the riders were in one block, but one rider flew far ahead of the column, and with frantic movements of hand and heel urged his horse faster and faster, so that one might have fancied that he was not the pursuer, but the pursued. But even at that great distance they could see something so fanatical, so unquestionable in his figure, that they knew it was the secretary himself. "I am sorry to cut short a culture discussion," said the colonel, "but can you lend me your motor car now, in 2 minutes?" "I have a suspicion that you are all mad," said Dr. Renard, smiling sociably, "but God forbid that madness should in any way interrupt friendship. Let us go round to the garage." Dr. Renard was a mild man with monstrous wealth. His rooms were more like the Musée de Cluny, and he had 3 motor cars. These, however, he seemed to use very sparingly, having the simple tastes of the French middle class. And when his impatient friends came to examine them, it took them some time to assure themselves that one of them even could be made to work. This, with some difficulty, they brought round into the street before the doctor's house. When they came out of the dim garage, they were startled to find that twilight had already fallen with the abruptness of night in the tropics. Either they had been longer in the place than they imagined, or some unusual canopy of cloud had gathered over the town. They looked down the steep streets and seemed to see a slight mist coming up from the sea. "It is now or never," said Dr. Bull. "I hear horses." "No," corrected the professor, "a horse." And as they listened, it was evident that the noise rapidly coming nearer on the rattling stones was not the noise of the whole cavalcade, but that of one horseman, who had left it far behind, the insane secretary. Syme's family, like most of those who end in the simple life, had once owned a motor, and he knew all about them. He had leaped at once into the chauffeur's seat, and with flushed face was wrenching and tugging at the disused machinery. He bent his strength upon one handle and then said quite quietly, "I am afraid it's no go." As he spoke, there swept round the corner a man rigid on his rushing horse, with the rush and rigidity of an arrow. He had a smile that thrust out his chin as if it were dislocated. He swept alongside of the stationary car into which its company had crowded and laid his hand on the front. It was the secretary, and his mouth went quite straight in the solemnity of triumph. Syme was leaning hard upon the steering wheel, and there was no sound but the rumble of the other pursuers riding into the town. Then there came quite suddenly a scream of scraping iron, and the car leaped forward. It plucked the secretary clean out of his saddle, as a knife is whipped out of its sheath, trailed him kicking terribly for 20 yards, and left him flung flat upon the road far in front of his frightened horse. As the car took the corner of the street with a splendid curve, they could just see the other anarchists filling the street and raising their fallen leader. "I can't understand why it has grown so dark," said the professor at last in a low voice. "Going to be a storm, I think," said Dr. Bull. "I say it's a pity we haven't got a light on this car, if only to see by." "We have," said the colonel, and from the floor of the car he fished up a heavy, old-fashioned, carved iron lantern with a light inside it. It was obviously an antique, and it would seem as if its original use had been in some way semi-religious, for there was a rude molding of a cross upon one of its sides. "Where on earth did you get that?" asked the professor. "I got it where I got the car," answered the colonel, chuckling, "from my best friend. While our friend here was fighting with the steering wheel, I ran up the front steps of the house and spoke to Renard, who was standing in his own porch, you will remember. I suppose," I said, "there's no time to get a lamp." He looked up, blinking amiably at the beautiful arched ceiling of his own front hall. From this was suspended by chains of exquisite ironwork this lantern, one of the 100 treasures of his treasure house. By sheer force, he tore the lamp out of its own ceiling, shattering the painted panels and bringing down 2 blue vases with its violence. Then he handed me the iron lantern, and I put it in the car. Was I not right when I said that Dr. Renard was worth knowing? You were, said Syme seriously, and hung the heavy lantern over the front. There was a certain allegory of their whole position in the contrast between the modern automobile and its strange ecclesiastical lamp. Hitherto they had passed through the quietest part of the town, meeting at most 1 or 2 pedestrians, who could give them no hint of the peace or the hostility of the place. Now, however, the windows in the houses began one by one to be lit up, giving a greater sense of habitation and humanity. Dr. Bull turned to the new detective who had led their flight and permitted himself one of his natural and friendly smiles. These lights make one feel more cheerful. Inspector Ratcliffe drew his brows together. There is only one set of lights that make me more cheerful, he said, and they are those lights of the police station, which I can see beyond the town. Please God, we may be there in 10 minutes. Then all Bull's boiling good sense and optimism broke suddenly out of him. Oh, this is all raving nonsense, he cried. If you really think that ordinary people in ordinary houses are anarchists, you must be madder than an anarchist yourself. If we turned and fought these fellows, the whole town would fight for us. No, said the other with an immovable simplicity. The whole town would fight for them. We shall see. While they were speaking, the professor had leaned forward with sudden excitement. What is that noise? He said. Oh, the horse is behind us, I suppose, said the colonel. I thought we had got clear of them. The horse is behind us? No, said the professor. It's not horses. And it is not behind us. Almost as he spoke, across the end of the street before them, 2 shining and rattling shapes shot past. They were gone almost in a flash, but everyone could see they were motor cars, and the professor stood up with a pale face and swore that they were the other 2 motor cars from Dr. Renard's garage. I tell you, they were his, he repeated with wild eyes, and they were full of men in masks. Absurd, said the colonel angrily. Dr. Renard would never give them his cars. He may have been forced, said Ratcliffe quietly. The whole town is on their side. You still believe that? Asked the colonel incredulously. You will all believe it soon, said the other with a hopeless calm. There was a puzzled pause for some little time, and then the colonel began again abruptly. No, I can't believe it. The thing is nonsense. The plain people of a peaceable French town. He was cut short by a bang and a blaze of light which seemed close to his eyes. As the car sped on, it left a floating patch of white smoke behind it, and Syme had heard a shot shriek past his ear. My God, said the colonel, someone has shot at us. It need not interrupt conversation, said the gloomy Ratcliffe. Pray resume your remarks, colonel. You were talking, I think, about the plain people of a peaceable French town. The staring colonel was long past minding satire. He rolled his eyes all around the street. It is extraordinary, he said, most extraordinary. A fastidious person, said Syme, might even call it unpleasant. However, I suppose those lights out in the field beyond this street are the gendarmerie. We shall soon get there. No, said Inspector Ratcliffe, we shall never get there. He had been standing up and looking keenly ahead of him. Now he sat down and smoothed his sleek hair with a weary gesture. What do you mean? Asked Bull sharply. I mean that we shall never get there, said the pessimist placidly. They have 2 rows of armed men across the road already. I can see them from here. The town is in arms, as I said it was. I can only wallow in the exquisite comfort of my own exactitude. And Ratcliffe sat down comfortably in the car and lit a cigarette, but the others rose excitedly and stared down the road. Syme had slowed down the car as their plans became doubtful, and he brought it finally to a standstill, just at the corner of a side street that ran down very steeply to the sea. The town was mostly in shadow, but the sun had not sunk. Wherever its level light could break through, it painted everything a burning gold. Up this side street, the last sunset light shone as sharp and narrow as the shaft of artificial light at the theater. It struck the car of the 5 friends and lit it like a burning chariot. but the rest of the street, especially the two ends of it, was in the deepest twilight, and for some seconds they could see nothing. Then Syme, whose eyes were the keenest, broke into a little bitter whistle and said, "It is quite true. There is a crowd or an army or some such thing across the end of that street." "Well, if there is," said Bull impatiently, "it must be something else, a sham fight or the mayor's birthday or something. I cannot and will not believe that plain, jolly people in a place like this walk about with dynamite in their pockets. Get on a bit, Syme, and let us look at them." The car crawled about 100 yards farther, and then they were all startled by Dr. Bull breaking into a high crow of laughter. "Why, you silly mugs," he cried, "what did I tell you? That crowd's as law-abiding as a cow, and if it weren't, it's on our side." "How do you know?" asked the professor, staring. "You blind bat," cried Bull, "don't you see who is leading them?" They peered again, and then the colonel, with a catch in his voice, cried out, "Why, it's Renard." There was indeed a rank of dim figures running across the road, and they could not be clearly seen. But far enough in front to catch the accident of the evening light was stalking up and down the unmistakable Dr. Renard in a white hat, stroking his long brown beard, and holding a revolver in his left hand. "What a fool I've been," exclaimed Colonel. "Of course, the dear old boy has turned out to help us." Dr. Bull was bubbling over with laughter, swinging the sword in his hand as carelessly as a cane. He jumped out of the car and ran across the intervening space, calling out, "Dr. Renard! Dr. Renard!" An instant after, Syme thought his own eyes had gone mad in his head, for the philanthropic Dr. Renard had deliberately raised his revolver and fired twice at Bull, so that the shots rang down the road. Almost at the same second as the puff of white cloud went up from this atrocious explosion, a long puff of white cloud went up also from the cigarette of the cynical Ratcliffe. Like all the rest, he turned a little pale, but he smiled. Dr. Bull, at whom the bullets had been fired, just missing his scalp, stood quite still in the middle of the road without a sign of fear, and then turned very slowly and crawled back to the car and climbed in with two holes through his hat. "Well," said the cigarette smoker slowly, "what do you think now?" "I think," said Dr. Bull with precision, "that I am lying in bed number 217 Peabody Buildings, and that I shall soon wake up with a jump. Or, if that's not it, I think that I am sitting in a small cushioned cell in Hanwell, and that the doctor can't make much sense of my case. But if you want to know what I don't think, I'll tell you. I don't think what you think. I don't think, and I never shall think, that the mass of ordinary men are a pack of dirty modern thinkers. No, sir, I'm a Democrat, and I still don't believe that Sunday could convert one average Navy or counter-jumper. No, I may be mad, but humanity isn't." Syme turned his bright blue eyes on Bull with an earnestness which he did not commonly make clear. "You are a very fine fellow," he said. "You can believe in a sanity which is not merely your sanity, and you're right enough about humanity, about peasants and people like that jolly old innkeeper. But you're not right about Renard. I suspected him from the first. He's rationalistic, and what's worse, he's rich. When duty and religion are really destroyed, it will be by the rich." "They are really destroyed now," said the man with a cigarette, and rose with his hands in his pockets. "The devils are coming on." The men in the motor car looked anxiously in the direction of his dreamy gaze, and they saw that the whole regiment at the end of the road was advancing upon them, Dr. Renard marching furiously in front, his beard flying in the breeze. The colonel sprang out of the car with an intolerant exclamation. "Gentlemen," he cried, "the thing is incredible. It must be a practical joke. If you knew Renard as I do, it's like calling Queen Victoria a dynamiter. If you had got the man's character into your head..." "Dr. Bull," said Simon sardonically, "has at least got it into his hat." "I tell you it can't be," said the colonel, stamping. "Renard shall explain it. He shall explain it to me," and he strode forward. "Don't be in such a hurry," drawled the smoker. "He will very soon explain it to all of us." But the impatient colonel was already out of earshot, advancing toward the advancing enemy. The excited Dr. Renard lifted his pistol again, but perceiving his opponent, hesitated, and the colonel came face to face with him with frantic gestures of remonstrance. "It is no good," said Syme. "He will never get anything out of that old heathen. I vote we drive bang."